You're listening to Safety Corner, powered by TCL and S1, for workers, by workers. Online and in-person health and safety programs and training available in 10-plus languages. Reach out to them at www.mys1.ca and DM them at my_S1 for more information.
Bon dia, Manny.
Bon dia, Philip. What's going on, bro?
I know. Another day. Another Saturday.
We should do one of these shows like late night, like probably just before the crack of dawn. Maybe at like 11:45 or something. Let it cross over to the next day.
PM?
Yeah, PM.
11?
I don't know why, but just to change it up. Because we always do everything every morning.
Man,
but we got to get the day started.
I'm usually in bed by 10 o'clock.
Nice being old, eh?
It's overtime for me, man. 11 o'clock.
It's nice being get old. Out of here. You want to shoot? Passed out too, huh?
You want to shoot out at 5 in the morning? I'm down.
No. Oh, that's true. Yeah, we could do it earlier in the morning. But yeah, I haven't seen midnight in a long time. I barely made it through New Year's. I made it. But I barely.
I did too. Actually, I had a great New Year's.
What are we talking about today?
All right. Today on tap, we have the Safety Summit. So this week, the Ontario General Contractors Association, OGCA, put on a safety summit. And what was a safety summit? It was like a conference, but for its members. And basically, all the health and safety professionals from those employers attended this safety summit. And it was a great...
Annually? Or is this the first one?
I'm not sure. It's the first one I ever been to. And it was a great event.
How many people were there?
I'll say there was over 150 people there. 100, 150, give or take.
Yeah?
Yeah, no, it was really good.
That's a good turnout. Okay. A lot of safety people.
It was a lot of safety people, and there was a presentation by the Ministry of Labor on stats, and we have some of the stats here for the show today, in terms of fatalities, critical injuries, over the course of the last 10 years. Well, 2013, I think, to 2023. We'll double check. I got the stats up here. But it was really great for the Ministry of Labor to do this presentation. It was a CPO office that did the presentation on the stats. And then basically all the safety professionals got split up into different groups.
Like a networking kind of thing?
Well, they split up into three different groups. And basically what happened was members of each group or each table, I guess, had different roles. So from the perspective of the worker, from the perspective of the employer, from the perspective of the supervisor. And depending on the issues, then everyone was kind of speaking from that perspective.
That's nice to see. That's a lot of proactivity going on there.
Well, yeah, and it was a great chance for everybody to kind of voice their concerns or the challenges that they're having with, you know, within their sector. You know, one thing to know here, though, is that a majority of the clients or the members that were there, you know, they come from the top 20% of the employers in our province in construction, right? So all the bigger companies. And companies at that level have more, I won't say unique challenges, because they have a lot of similarities with the challenges of the bottom 20% or the bottom 60-80%. But it was really good to hear different perspectives.
And are they aware of the bottom? Do they acknowledge the bottom?
You know, I think after that safety summit, after that presentation, or after the whole thing, I think more people became aware of some of the issues. So I was there, and Kevin from Cobalt Safety was there.
Yeah, I saw your post. You had a picture with Kevin great. Yeah.
And, you know, we got a chance to ask a lot of questions and bring up a lot of points. And I apologize if we stole the mic there a bit. You know, sometimes we get a little ahead of ourselves in terms of safety. But there was a lot of good questions and a lot of points that were made by all around the table. And I think it was a great takeaway.
So it was a productive get together.
Really? Yeah, that's what it was, right? So some of the takeaways from the group, you know, some of the issues that they were discussing, some of the challenges that they're facing, a lot has to do with worker responsibilities, duties and responsibilities of workers, making good choices, critical thinking, common sense. You know, how do you teach that? How do we get the workers to participate more in health and safety? You know, so there's a lot of different conversations regarding worker responsibilities.
Did they say that the workers are getting better regarding their responsibilities in the last 10 years?
I think it depends on the scenario. It depends on the construction project, you know, depending on which way you're looking at it. If I'm looking at it from the perspective of, you know, workers that are new to this country that don't speak English, you know, they're going to face different challenges than workers that have been in this industry for 20 years and have already worked on these major projects and stuff like that. I think a lot of it, the way it was being explained and discussed, I think a lot of it had to do with just critical thinking and common sense, man. You know how they say it. Common sense isn't that common these days.
I was just about to say something like that, right? You know? Okay. All right. So it's good. Workers' responsibilities.
And keep in mind from the perspective of workers, you know, workers are facing a lot of pressures from a lot of different angles these days, whether it's economically, whether it's security in terms of their position and their jobs and money and stress and family. And, you know, it's very easy for workers to be distracted at work.
And push safety down.
Yeah. You know, it's you know,
it's just, it happens.
Yeah, I think the workforce right now is walking on eggshells, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I agree with you. Totally. Right? 100%.
So it's really tricky. And I think a lot of these safety challenges that we're seeing now, we've been seeing the last few months, and what we're going to be seeing going forward, just because of everything that's happening in our industry, you know, we're going to be faced with more unique challenges or issues that haven't been around for the last 20 years.
I'd say so.
You know, all of a sudden now we're facing things. It's like, okay. Subcontractor safety. So this is always a challenge, no matter what level it's at, right? A majority of the players that were at this safety summit, a majority of them are constructors. They hire a variety of subcontractors, and sometimes you hire a sub, and then that sub hires another sub, sub of a sub.
Yeah.
And when you start getting into that area of a sub of a sub of a sub, you know, you start getting into who's doing what paperwork, what are the responsibilities, who's overseeing this, who's verifying that.
Passing the buck?
It becomes a bit of a merry-go-round there in terms of passing the buck. Okay. Right? But
the buck and responsibilities and liabilities.
Well, liability, we all share. Responsibilities, we all share. It's whether or not, you know, that they're pulling their weight when it comes to safety. True. Right? So, you know, there are a lot of challenges across the board, no matter which level you're at in dealing with subcontractor safety. And then another big one that came up was language barriers.
Has it always been there?
Of course. It's always been there, you know, from...
But now it's a variety of languages, because back in the day, it would have been maybe three or four languages.
Sure.
Dictating the whole market, right? The majority of the people back in the day, and when I say back in the day, 60s, 70s, 80s.
Well, you can even
European languages.
You can even go further back. You know, the building of the CN Rail in Canada, and the majority of that was Asians, the Chinese.
Yep.
And, you know, can you imagine the language barrier back then?
There'd be a lot of pointing.
Yep.
That's all it would be.
And a lot of, and unfortunately with that example, there was a lot of fatalities.
Oh, a huge amount.
Massive amount of fatalities, right?
It was bad.
Oh, yeah. They did that thing. They would send guys in with dynamite. That whole thing would blow up, and they'd have another 10 guys ready to go in. It's crazy.
But today, we have similar challenges, language barriers, right?
Oh, yeah. No, language barriers, I think, is probably definitely in the top three challenges, you know, that every employer is facing right now.
Is it not like, I want to play stupid for a second. Can we not create safety education like IKEA does with their manuals?
Multiple languages?
Well, there's no language at all.
Well,
it's imagery.
Yeah, images are you know, pictograms and pictures and videos and stuff like that.
Can we not do safety that way?
Well, listen, it definitely helps. It definitely helps. You know, I find with our system and with our clients that are using our system, you know, we do have we do have a good percentage that are illegal workers and non-English speaking workers just because of the nature of our system. I find that the training that we create for our clients, I find that the more pictures it has and the more videos it has, the better it is for the worker to understand.
They can connect with it.
Yeah.
I know plenty of people that come to this country and learned English based off of YouTube. Watching English-speaking videos.
Sure, and that's how I learned Portuguese when I was a kid, watching Portuguese TV and, you know, a little bit of Portuguese.
Really?
Oh, yeah, man. I used to spend months and months in Portugal when I was a kid.
And just watching Portuguese TV?
Yeah, and just speaking Portuguese and just being around Portuguese people, you definitely absorb it that way,
What's Portuguese content these days like?
what, like on TV?
On TV, yeah. I don't know.
Well, I don't know. I don't watch it anymore, man.
Well, you know the Spanish. You had the telenovelas, right?
Well, yeah.
Those are the dramas, right?
Yeah.
And there's nothing, there's nothing off limits with those things.
No. the European soap commercials and shampoo commercials were a lot different than the North American ones I can remember as a kid.
Movies. I know. It's different. I get it. Yeah. Okay, so language is still an issue. So I get
language is definitely is still an issue. I think it's becoming a bigger issue every day that goes by.
Yeah.
Right? And then we're dealing with, again, with illegal workers and the rights of those workers.
And
right?
The abuse of illegal workers.
Yeah, right? Every worker in this province, no matter your status, has rights. Right? And those rights apply to you. And the Ministry of Labor is tasked with protecting the rights of the workers and enforcing the act and the regulations.
Let me ask you a question, because our lovely government just announced they're going to fast track illegal construction workers.
6,000 of them. 6,000 illegal workers. Is this a good thing or bad thing? I think it's a great thing. Okay. I think the timing is off.
Yeah.
Right? Listen, if I'm just speaking as a worker, I'm speaking as, someone that has had family that come from overseas and illegals and, I think hard workers is what this country needs, no matter which sector. And if you're 100%. A hard worker and you've been putting in your time and your hours and risking your life working for these shady employers and jumping in the back of pickup trucks, and you're getting an opportunity now to become a citizen, I think that's amazing. I respect those people. People that come here, don't work, collect checks, stay at home, watch TV all day, and
eventually leave the country.
Right now,
there's loans being given out.
Oh yeah, and listen,
I know.
I don't even understand the criteria. Like, how did they find these 6,000 workers? They must have been in the process because already.
Maybe
it's not like the government went to Tim Hortons and picked 6,000 workers. But
also, what percentage of 6,000 would that be? Like, what's the percentage?
Meaning what?
Like how many of the actual illegal workers that are out there compared to, so if there's, 100,000 and they're giving 6% at that point.
And I think
we don't know.
I think this was 6,000 in Canada. I don't know if it was just Ontario.
Oh no, this is Canada. This was Canada. Federally. This was
federally. It was the federal minister. Announced. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
So that's so this would all have been of national, Canada.
All of Canada, which I guess would be the majority BC and Ontario. Those are the two big hubs right now.
Maybe
right?
They split it up evenly between all provinces. Who knows?
I mean, right? I agree with you. It's a good thing if they, yeah, but you're right. How do they find them? And
there has to be a criteria.
Yeah.
Number one. Number two, they must be in the process. Their name has to be in the system because, again, they didn't just go pick up random 6,000 illegals somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And, I think it's a great thing, but the timing's off. People, associations.
Should have been done years ago.
Years ago, because we've always had illegal workers, right? And, at times, I'll say in Ontario, there must have been at least 50,000 illegal workers, if not more.
For sure.
Right? Across all the sectors, I'll say more.
Yeah, the last 10 years has not been about proactive. It's not even, I would even say reactive.
Sometimes I think
it's play active.
Yeah, sometimes we're just in the river going down the rapids with no paddle. Right. So anyways, illegal workers, rights of those workers, how are they being protected? How are they being enforced? It's challenges, man. But this is human rights stuff, man. This is, yep. you start getting into human rights abuses. And the UN called it last year. They came up with a whole report on Ontario and Canada and human rights. And
specifically?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
The way our system is set up is... It allows for the exploitation.
I don't think anybody's looking towards Canada as a leadership of anything.
No, we have no leadership. We, this place is a zoo. Okay.
Enforcement.
So that's a big issue, but enforcement from two perspectives. A, from the perspective of the Ministry of Labor and the lack of enforcement from the Ministry of Labor.
Nobody wants the job.
I think nobody wants the job. I think...
But does the government have the money to pay the people that want the job?
They definitely need a raise, right? I know it's a government worker, but I think with government workers, all the frontline staff are the ones deserving of raises. Mm-hmm. Not the management that sit and make meetings.
They're the ones that are always getting it.
Apparently they are.
And bonuses and perks.
Yeah. Listen, Ministry of Labor is like Twitter. You know?
In what respect?
You can fire 50% of the people working there and that place would probably even run better.
Oh, that's very true.
But not the frontline stuff.
It's true.
Right? I'm talking about managers and directors and, say, you know, people that, and I get it, we need managers, we need directors, but I think Ministry of Labor right now is very top heavy. But that's just speaking as an employer and someone that operates a business in this province. Employer internal responsibility system. And so enforcement, just so we have enforcement from the perspective of the Ministry of Labor being on projects, addressing these worker rights issues and health and safety and contraventions. But we also have enforcement internally as part of the internal responsibility system. And there was one lady that was at this summit and she made some excellent points when it comes down to internal responsibility system and employers and constructors policing themselves, right? Enforcing. Yeah, but yeah. It's sometimes like the internal responsibility system, IRS is what it's called, the acronym in safety. You know, it's been around for a long, long, long time. The fundamentals of, creating rules, creating expectations, policing those rules, policing those expectations, tracking those expectations, you know, and tracking the results of the work you're doing, et cetera. So, you know, there was a lot of valid points, a lot of excellent points that was made at this summit. And to be honest with you, this whole thing was very refreshing to me. Usually you go to these safety
things. What was your thought process when you got first invited to it and you were going to come to it? What were you thinking it was going to be like?
Honestly, I didn't have any expectations. Okay. You know, if I go to something and I don't like it, I just get up and leave.
But you were there the whole evening?
I was there the whole time. I was actually probably one of the last guys to leave, man. I ended up sticking around.
So there was value there. Huge.
For me, there was, right? Okay. And I think some of the value, too, was, again, us putting things on the radar that maybe other people don't see. And it's very easy when you're a safety professional working for a company that's a 7, an 8, a 9, for you to just kind of put things on cruise control and see your bubble, your own little world, right? And I think, you know, with me and Kevin there, we talked about the challenges that faced the entire system. And it was interesting too, because they did the stats, and we'll get into the stats next, but who do you think has, which sector of construction, before I flip the slide here, which sector of construction do you think had the most fatalities in stats? Fatalities and critical injuries.
Oh, it's low rise.
Yeah. It's low rise residential.
Because low rise residential is not policed the same way that high rise residential is.
That's it.
That's the bottom line. And that's the cause and effect, in my opinion.
I think so. I think so. Well, there's a couple other contributing factors. And we got to keep in mind, too, that. And I think safety has switched in the last few years. A lot of these associations and stuff like that, yes, they talk about a variety of issues, but a majority of their clients, their events, their this, their that, are all focused on the, you know, 20%, the top 20, the top 25%. These are the players. These are the ones that are sending people to our training centers. These are the ones.
But do they have a mindset that we're the ones that are actually dictating how much construction gets done in Canada? Do they have this mindset that we're the first string? Listen, we're the all-stars.
I don't know. I can see
them having that mindset.
It's possible, right? But, you know, one thing's for sure. The areas where we operate in, you know, some of my clients and, you know, people we have on the system and stuff like that, some of these, they haven't even heard of the Ministry of Labor. They don't know who the Ministry of Labor is.
Really?
Yeah, man. And some people choose not to know, right? Ignorance is bliss. But some people are just, it doesn't faze them. Some of these employers, they operate under the radar, and that's where they're happy to operate, right? And I think some of these associations, well, it's not I think, I know, some of these associations do not penetrate that bottom 25%. You know, I'll even say the bottom 50%, right? Some of these, it's difficult, you know? There's some people that do not want government intervention. There's some employers that do not want oversight.
I'm one of them.
I am too. But
I don't. Government doesn't belong in construction.
But the enforcement does.
The enforcement does, but I don't consider, okay, construction enforcement.
Yeah.
I rather see a construction person leading the way on enforcement of construction personnel.
Well, yeah. Enforcement is always.
I don't want someone who read a book about safety. Yeah,
you want someone that has experience from the trades.
Yes.
100%.
Whether it's high rise, low rise, industrial, whatever it is. Yeah. I don't care. But I don't want somebody who read a book, studied it in post. I want someone who's one of us.
One of Us. One.
I'm just what movie saying, is that from? Because I'm sure that you went in there when you were an inspector. You understood where they were coming from.
Yeah.
So you that contributed to your thought process on investigations.
100%. 100%. It definitely helps you put in the mindset of that worker or that employer if you have tons of experience mm-hmm. in the different sectors, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, listen, I value my experience. And, you know, I think it should be that if you're going to be an enforcement officer, you should be coming from the trades and the tools.
Yeah.
It definitely helps, right? But that's not to say that just because you took a course and you 2-year program that you can't be an excellent inspector. But you'd want to surround yourself with people with more experience.
Yes.
Right? You want to have a sounding board. And even as an inspector at the Ministry of Labor, you know, I had certain things that I was really good at, and then certain things where I would call other inspectors that have different experience or more experience in those in that area, and I would call them and ask them questions, man.
Would you want a pilot flying a plane that you're on that has aced their simulator pilot's test every single time, or would you want a pilot who's actually landed a few planes in real life and taken off a few planes in real life? That's what I mean.
Listen, there is a minimum criteria, I'm guessing, to fly a plane.
I know, right? But I'm just saying. I think right now we have a lot of people that are simulating construction. is my point.
Yes.
Simulation of construction.
Yes. Listen, man, the best thing that I can say here is that the Ministry of Labor definitely needs to pull their socks up and...
Yeah, but just take some of the money that's being laundered somewhere else and actually use it for Ministry of Labor. But
then it starts solving problems, Manny. And you know how it goes. Once you start solving problems, then, you know, then there's no more money for it.
But that means you start solving problems?
Yeah.
But that's the objective, to solve problems.
You'd like to think so, but this is the government. They work upside down.
Oh, wow. So right? You can't solve problems.
Well, listen, what happens if they solved homelessness? How much money would they save? Listen, Doge all the way around. Yeah, the place,
we
man.
Need it. We totally need it. What's with the ML? What MILTSD?
That's the new. Well, not the new, but that's the acronym for the Ministry of Labor. What does it stand for? Ministry
MILTSB? MILTSB?
Ministry of Immigration, Labor, Training, Standards. Fuck. Something or other. I don't know, man.
There's a whole think tank marketing PR firm that comes up with this shit.
And safety acronyms, it's insane. And the worst is that they keep on switching.
Then don't for the switch. Same thing. take the lead from automakers, man. You don't keep on switching your badge. You establish it. You get it in there and you establish it. Listen. But you know what happens is government comes in and goes, oh, we need to include these guys. So that's another letter attached to our acronym.
I don't know, man. I don't know, but you know.
So overall, it was a good March 6th.
It was fantastic.
It's going to come back again next year. Is that
I hope idea? So.
Yeah,
I hope so.
And who? Here's a stupid question. Who funded it?
I'm guessing it was the OGCA and their members that put this together. All
right. Was the food good?
Food was delicious. Okay, it was a cool. Peter and Paul's thing, man.
Really. Mm. Yeah. Open bar or no?
No.
That would make no sense. Eh?
I bet you a lot of more free-flowing conversation would have happened if it was open bar.
That's true.
Sometimes, you know.
Give me the mic. Give me the mic. You just hear that feedback.
All right.
All right. Graphs.
Let's get into graphs. Yeah. So the first caveat, this information has not been released to the public by the Ministry of Labor. This is aggregate data that they are still gathering and piecing together. So we're only showing the fatalities and the average age. There was a few more layers, but this is definitely the top layer. These stats probably most likely will not change once they finalize all of this. And if they do, it'll be plus minus one or two.
Well, I mean, 10 years is a good chunk of data collection. So it's a nice barometer for what potentially the next 10 years is going
to
be like.
Listen, this is not hard to put together. Every year they have stats and all you got to do is add up all those stats. Right. So it's not that it was just let's group this into a 10-year thing. And, you know, sometimes depending which 10 years you're grouping will change these stats. But let's take a look at it. So these stats are from 2013 to 2023. So this doesn't include anything from 2024.
Okay.
Ontario construction sector, 254 traumatic fatalities, an average of 23 per year.
This is Ontario.
Ontario only. Okay, so first caveat here, or firstly, an explanation. What is a traumatic fatality? Traumatic fatality can be falls, struck by, crushed by, electrocutions, trench collapse. Okay, so those types of fatalities.
Deaths, no?
They're fatalities, but they're grouped differently. So these are traumatic fatalities. The other group that they have is occupational illness. So
long-term.
Yes. Got it. I've been exposed to asbestos. I've, lead.
And that eventually gets categorized as a fatality.
Eventually gets tracked and categorized as a fatality. Now, whether those numbers for occupational illness are accurate, it's a really hard sell.
It's hard to sell.
Right? I worked for an asbestos. I got lung cancer. I'm 65. I have lung cancer. I worked for an asbestos or a demolition company 20 years ago. I worked for them for 10 years, right? How do I connect the asbestos, the lung cancer, to that work?
Good luck. That's difficult.
Well, WSIB is definitely covering some occupational illness injuries for sure.
Are they?
Yeah, it's on their radar. I'm sure they're paying out for some, right? But the question is the burden of proof? How do you tie it all together? How do you know it's from that place and not that place? What happens if that place is already bankrupt?
There's a lot of variables. Closed? How many years you've been smoking? When did you start vaping?
Yeah. Like, and that's an insurance company too, right?
I know the insurance comes in as well.
Yeah. Well, WSAB is the insurance company. So I'm sure they make it difficult, I guess. Maybe I shouldn't say the word difficult, but.
But in that 10 years you had, how many? 300?
What are we looking at? Critical injuries? No, the occupational illness stats aren't on these.
Oh, they're not on there.
They're not included on these ones. They were excluded for this presentation. Not sure why, but they were excluded. So an average of 23 construction workers die a year. Traumatic. If you count the occupational illness, I'll guesstimate the average of occupational illness is probably in the area of 200 workers per year.
So pretty much the same amount as deaths.
No. Traumatic fatalities, 23 per year. And then occupational illness, 200.
Oh, 200 per year. I thought you meant 200 over the 10 year.
No, I'm
holy, really that much.
Eh? I'm saying, yeah. Again, guesstimate.
Yeah, of course, because they're not putting it there.
They'll put it out, though. Sooner or later, it'll come out. But yeah, that's my guesstimate, an average of 200.
And then that's in line with what I think it is, because there's 98.5% are men, 1.5% are women.
Yeah, so they also split the traumatic fatalities based on gender. Yeah. And 98.5% men and 1.5% women.
Has it been going up? It went down 1 year.
I think the average has been going up.
The average has been going up.
By the looks of this graph. Relatively, 20 to 25. It's always within there.
What's really scary is that this is all under the age of 35.
Yeah. So
young workers.
Yeah. So the average age of workers at time of death, according to this data, is less than 35 years old. It makes up the majority of the segment. Man. Again, that's when you're in your prime, right?
So the old guys have learned how to not die.
Well, no, they got some big numbers too. They're 24%. Yeah. 55 and up.
They're still up there.
Right? 24. This is over the 10-year period, the average age of worker fatalities, 24% for ages 55 and up. And then first place is 34% for 35 and down. And then, are you putting on the glasses?
Yeah, it's fucking small. That's why.
Manny needs manual
zoom. I'm just paying attention to 2013 to 2015. So you've got, that's the one that stands, 2016 to 2018 is the one that stands out.
Yeah.
That's when you saw the older guys increase.
Yeah.
And then the next group below, so 55 plus was the most, 45 to 54 was the least, 35 to 44 was medium, and then less than 35 was the second most.
Yeah. But again,
so what happened that year? Those 2 years, they're 2016, 2018. Who knows, man? It's just
sometimes that's the way you get sliced. I don't know.
Well, death has got no preference on age, man. I'm just trying to figure out.
Yeah, but again, this comes down to maybe this comes down to, like young workers, for example, always have a higher risk of injury and fatality. And, a lot of people can try to guess or infer why. Right, you're new at the job. You're younger. You take more risks. You'll do riskier things.
I want to say also you're distracted. I think guys are on their devices and something happens.
It's getting really bad. You know what's getting really out of control with workers on the gambling, man.
Gambling?
Yeah.
What do you mean, on the site? What do you mean, online gambling?
Yeah.
Online gambling.
Yeah, man.
Is that including crypto?
I don't know.
Online gambling.
Yeah, it's
trying to hit payday on while they're working. Really?
Yeah. Online gambling, man. But anyways, side note.
No. Okay, but that makes sense, right? I'm just trying to figure out why. Yeah, because there's a target now on the younger workers. But what is the reason? I can see distraction. I can see lack of understanding.
I think it's more risk.
Right? Risk. They take the risk. They're not.
I think it's not fully understanding your rights and responsibilities. I think it's also
do this. Don't question.
Yeah, listen, you're more gung-ho when you're younger, man. I did a lot of stupid things when
you
I was a kid.
You want to prove yourself and get advancements, I get
it. Yeah, and then you become older and you become wiser and you've already made some mistakes and you've already had a few near misses and then your risk appetite and your risk level goes down.
You keep on pushing. I get it.
You keep pushing, but, you know, you'll think twice. And this is, again, a guesstimate, right? But, you know, the psychology of safety and understanding why certain groups face more challenges or have these higher stats. You know, it's very important to understand the whys.
No, you have to.
I think so, right?
Well, that's part of the whole investigation process.
Well, listen, sometimes you can understand the whys, or sometimes the whys just not readily available. But when you start looking at aggregate data like this, you know, you definitely start raising some of these questions. And why is definitely a big question here for age.
Yeah, I would be. If I was studying this, if I was the government paying attention to this and I was being paid a salary to review this and understand
this. Lots of ifs there.
10 years study, you know, all this information, I'd be looking at the numbers going, okay, why? What happened? Let's try to cause and effect, figure out why this is going on here and what was done to make the following year better, improved.
Yeah.
What did we do differently?
Yeah, no, self-reflection is key to ensuring that our health and safety system is operating and addressing these issues. Right, but you know,
criticals is scary.
Yeah, so criticals, this is big, man. So over that 10-year period, we'd had 4,262 critical injuries.
Holy, that's
so that's
a lot.
An average of 387 per year. I'd like to note though, critical injuries just means almost a fatality. Almost, but
it could have been a fatality if one variable was different.
Pretty much,
something like that.
Pretty much.
That's a lot, though. 4,000 plus?
Well, that's over a 10-year period. So 387. Has it been going down? If you look at this data, I'll say the average is still close to 300.
It goes down, goes up.
The average is above 300.
Yeah.
Well, the average is 387.
Well, the criticals, what's interesting is that more women were critically injured.
Yeah, that's 240.
Like three times?
No,
four
no.
times.
Critical injuries is still 94.4% men.
Yeah, right? No, I know. Critical but I'm comparing it to traumatic, right? So 1.5 women, 5.6 women in critical.
Yes.
That's what I'm comparing it to.
Yeah. No, there's definitely a higher number.
A four times increase in women critical injuries than fatalities.
Yeah.
So I wonder why. What's going on there, too?
I'd be curious and about that. That's a good question. You know, and you know, you'd like to think first it takes a lot of, well, not that much time, but it takes time to compile all of this data. Number one,
of course it does.
Right? But then what do you do with the data? How this should be shaping initiatives and targets and, you know, setting up blitzes from this data. And
but like you said, that's solving problems.
Yeah.
Here's the one thing that I do not see on this, and you'll never see it on these. Illegals.
Yeah. So this was a question actually posed to the chief prevention office, which is, you know, is this capturing illegal workers that got dropped off at the hospital and said that they got hurt at home or something like that, right? Or
because they are also getting critical and fatality.
Yeah. Like, how do you capture this? Is it possible that in 2023, three illegals died on construction projects?
Here's a question for you. Do you think the illegal numbers would double these numbers or be less than doubling these numbers?
I think it's less just because the group is less. You know what I mean? But again,
I don't know where I'm at.
There's very little data.
Yeah, we don't know.
We don't. This isn't a segment. you know, I know,
but what's the stereotype? When you got on a job site, scattered, most of the time people who are scattering are the illegals that are scattering from the job site. Oh, yeah,
man. It's I've had some crazy scenarios. I remember once on a job site, it was a bit of a blitz inspection on a site. And I guess somebody had told all these guys, drywallers and stuff, that immigration was on site. So they're all screaming, immigration, immigration. Man, I'll never forget. I opened the back of a sliding door of a unit. It was like a low rise. They were building 500 homes, whatever. I opened the back of the sliding door and I stick my head out and I see a guy on stilts running, man.
On the stilts?
On stilts, Manny. If this guy was to race me on stilts, he'd beat me. That's how good this guy was. Running through the job site like a gazelle. I couldn't believe it.
Keeping his head low.
Oh, man. But, you know, listen, Nat.
It'd be nice to somehow capture the illegal numbers because I know they're there.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody wants to talk about it, but they're definitely there.
But, and they would put some more percentage points on all of this.
And what's really sad is that I think that the illegals would be taking more risks.
They are the group of workers that take the most risks in construction.
Yeah.
Period.
Because they know that they'll be fired and they have no work now.
There's no fired, Manny.
I know. They just won't be.
You're just not getting paid. That's it. Thanks for the day of work and you're not getting paid.
Get out of here. I know.
It's horrible, man.
So they'll take the most risks, man.
That's the first risk. That's working sad. And not getting paid. That's risk number one. Risk number two, getting in a truck with a complete stranger.
Now you got to crack down on the employers for that one. But that's a whole other show. We've discussed that already.
Let's not get into it, man. I'm very passionate about that segment.
The employers are the ones that are fault, man, in my opinion.
Yeah, but some of them aren't even employers. It's you're a homeowner and you got a big hole to dig in your backyard. Oh, I know.
Homeowners are classic for that. American homeowners are classic. That started the whole thing in America. You can go to any Home Depot. Any Home Depot at the morning there, and you'll have dozens and dozens of workers.
Oh, yeah. So I've obviously seen it down in the States, and, you know, it's been on, you know, we've seen, again, when it comes to illegals, it's always been here. It's just never been as on the forefront. I've never seen it the way I saw last year. And last year, I think, was peak when it was worker shortage, the borders all open here.
Yeah.
Right? Now the weather's getting a little nicer. Let's see how many of the illegal workers stayed because, you know, they flow to where the money goes, right? Yeah. So if the money's not here, they won't be here, right? So I think, you know, as soon as the weather warms up a bit, you'll start seeing. I guess it's a good metric because go to Tim Hortons and see how many people are standing outside at 7 o'clock in the morning. Right? Which is crazy, man. So, you know, overall, the average hasn't changed.
We haven't gotten better, really.
We haven't gotten better. We haven't gotten worse. It's just...
And that's a 10-year period. Yeah. And that's a 10-year period of an uprise in economy. And now we're going into a 10-year period of a down slope in economy.
Yeah, so,
what's going to happen?
The numbers are going to go down.
They're going to go down on face value, but I think the risks are going to go up.
Well, listen, it depends how you look at this data. If this data is done as per 100,000 hours of worked hours by construction workers, then the data won't get skewed. But if you're just saying in 2023, we had 10 fatalities, in 2024, we had 12 fatalities, but now that construction is down in 2025 and it's pretty much...
Five fatalities frozen. Now. We're doing better.
We had five fatalities. So, you know, yay. Right?
That's false.
100%. Right? But again, it's the government.
The government will take that as a win.
Yeah, yeah. That's a hard. We're winning. Right? We should spend another $100 million.
We need to pay the upper management more money because they're doing such a great job. They all
deserve raises, man, because they did such a good job. Here's a pat
on the back there. Yeah, okay.
Listen, I'm not... I know I take some shots at the MOL, but... MOL or enforcement is necessary because if we did not have checks and balances, it'd be far worse.
It'd be far, far worse.
The level of exploitation here would be insane.
Yeah.
Right. We need checks and balances of the system. We need enforcement to protect these workers' rights. We need enforcement to ensure that the act and the regulations are being followed.
Yep.
You know, if the cat's away, the mice come out and play. That works in every enforcement agency. If the police weren't out and they showed no presence and people were doing things and getting caught and going in and getting released on bail the next day, what would happen?
Wait a minute. That's what's currently going on.
Holy shit, it is, man. You're right. So people are committing crimes. They're getting arrested. It's like watching
RoboCop.
If they get caught.
24/7. OmniCorp.
Holy cow. But yeah, you need enforcement, man. And, you know, it's just, you need targeted enforcement. Just to have, you know, a machine gun to try to kill a fly is not going to work.
I think we actually need an internal affairs for every government office. A third-party impartial governing body that investigates their own. Oh, wait a minute. We do have that, but they're not doing anything.
Listen.
On some levels.
I don't know. I know that, you know, when you're dealing with guns and the threat of killing people and stuff like that, then, yeah, you know, internal affairs makes a sense. Or what was it called? The SIU? Here we have it?
Yeah.
Right? That makes total sense, right? Because a lot of crazy things happen to police officers and stuff. But for the Ministry of Labor, no, I'm sure they can police themselves. I enjoyed working at the Ministry of Labor. I think it was one of my best jobs, if not the best. And, you know, we had a lot of freedom as inspectors, but I did my work.
No, I'd be talking about so, policing the upper management, not policing the inspectors.
Oh, no, it's a waste of time. Just fire half of them. Boom.
Just Twitter exit. That's it.
Boom. No questions asked.
Twitter exit.
What did you name me the five things you've done last week?
Yeah. What did you accomplish?
Oh, I had a meeting to discuss the last meeting and schedule the next meeting.
How was the golf game? It was good.
Yeah.
It was great. All right.
Listen.
Okay.
There's people holding positions at the Ministry of Labor that don't even know how to hold a hammer.
Dun,
dun, all right. So.
What's this?
We always talk about, you know, languages and challenges that employers face. And, you know, I think we're very fortunate to be well positioned with our system, with our clients in terms of addressing some of these challenges, especially languages and stuff like that, that came up. Me personally, you know, with my system and why we built it had a lot to do with the Metron case and the languages. And, you know, we want to offer a system that really starts tackling some of these challenges. So one of our clients, and we've worked with them for a long time, you know, this client has over 100 workers. They're part of the SOCI program. You know, they have a nice 500-page health and safety policy and program, you know, but, and their biggest hazards deal with falls and stuff like that.
Do you want to name the employer? Or no,
it's whatever. Okay, you know, it's just because we're still in the initial stage, but you can see it there. It's Triumph. Shout out to Triumph and Mario and all of his teams over there, and Ken and Toons and all of his teams over there. And everyone's doing an excellent job. And we're fortunate enough to work with these teams to tackle some of these language issues. And so what we did was we took, you know, the biggest hazards that they have and the biggest challenges is falls as a roofing company, of right? And they do a variety of work with a variety of clients from TTC to City of Toronto to schools to, you know, they do a lot of work. And that being said, you know, they have a lot of challenges when it comes to falls and different systems they use. And, you know, yes, these workers all trained at Working at Heights, but a majority of the Working at Heights courses is in English, right? Their health and safety program is in English. Right. And I'll say close to 40, if not over, are workers that have English as a second language. Right. So how is this information?
So being, 1/3 of the workforce?
No, of these guys. Yeah. Again,
1/3.
I'll say a little bit higher, but yeah.
Okay.
You know, I'll say, yeah.
It's not even in, I know I've asked this. It's not even in French, the Ministry of Labor. It's not even in French. They don't offer that.
This isn't the government, right? This is an employer's internal health and safety policy and program. This is an employer's, but in terms of Working at Heights, do they offer in French? I'm sure they do.
Yeah, it's English and French,
right? Yeah, I'm sure they do, okay. Right?
All right. Point is, we need more languages.
Again, it's tricky to address this issue because just in Toronto, we speak, what, 120, 180? I have no idea. Oh, 150? It's definitely over 100 languages spoken, right? And in construction is easily the most diverse group.
Yeah.
Right, in any sector in this province, right? So languages is always a massive challenge, you know, and what we do is we build custom training and due diligence and, you know, safety talks and inspections and all of that nice stuff that goes along with your safety system. But with this client and with this group, you know, we really wanted to tackle the workers understanding the regs, the workers understanding the procedures, yep. You know, the hazards, the controls, the anchor systems, a lot of it. And so we built it. And this is available in 10 languages. And so with our system, we took the 10 most spoken languages in construction. And we built it. And in this training pack, and we build a lot of custom stuff, but we wanted to showcase some of the things that we do for our clients, right? And
they're working. It benefits them.
Oh, yeah. Listen, with some of the training packs we've done and some of the things we've customized for some of our clients previously, not this one, but previously or with other clients, you know, we have workers coming up to me in Spanish and Portuguese and like, Phil, thank you, man. No one's ever taught this. No one's ever communicated. I didn't even know that that's what it was called. Like, people are just, they're really thankful, which is nice. You know, and for me, that's great. Right.
Because now you're getting the information to the people that understand it, right?
Well, we're increasing the employer's ability to communicate. That's what we're doing.
That's huge.
Right. And we're increasing the worker's ability to understand. You know, without communication and understanding all of this safety stuff, like, this is a lot, man. You know, like,
they're going to run into risks not understanding the situation.
Well, of course.
And then you're going to have it. Critical, or you're going to have a death.
Well, you like to think that better communication and better worker understanding of procedures or sector specific issues or, you know, contraventions and how to avoid them and controls. You'd like to think so. I've seen it with my other clients. I've seen it with other workers where, we have one client where 50% of the workers are illegals. The other 50% also don't speak English. They're illegals, but they're Portuguese and Spanish.
Okay.
And, you know, they've been our client for maybe 2 years. And when we jumped in, they were on a scale of 1 to 10, maybe a 1.
Ooh.
Okay. And I'll say right now, they're probably operating at a 7, give or take. But that process...
To get there,
it takes a really long time. You know, it takes...
But the language has had a lot to say with that?
I think the language has sped up the process. And you got to keep this in mind from a safety company or a safety individual. It's very easy, like we've mentioned before. You know, I come fresh out of school. I get hired by company A, which is operating at a 7 and an 8. You know, and I'm dealing with the challenges that company has, a 7 and 8. If you really want to test yourself as a health and safety professional, you go work for a client that has a 1.
Yeah.
That's where you build your experience. That's where you face the challenges. That's where you grow as a safety professional, if you're able to crack that nut.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, listen, I'm glad we built the system. It's coming in really handy in this last few years. Our clients love it. And away we go. So let me show you kind of what it is. So this is designed specifically for Triumph. This has not been deployed yet. Yeah. You know, in the next few weeks, we will be deploying it and training it. For example, how this is going to get sliced out is basically myself and the safety team are going to train all these workers in English. Okay, so I'll be up on the screen with my power, with our system.
Yeah.
Training everyone in English, but on their phones or on their tablets or on their whatever.
They're reading it.
They're reading it in their language, right? And so they can follow along with the screen. But again, there's
really, Portuguese. So you're teaching, wow.
We'll teach it in English.
You can do that.
Yeah, because listen, I only speak a few languages, right?
I know, but then when they log in and they're
reviewing. Everything is in their language.
That's pretty cool.
And I'm not talking about just the training pack. I'm talking about the entire system.
Everything
is in their language. Wow. Right, so we have Spanish workers doing fall protection inspections in Spanish. That's unheard of.
It makes a lot of sense.
Right, our safety talks, you know, that our supervisors do out in the field, they can do them in English, and everyone that's there gets it in their language. So we have some clients that have Russians, Ukrainians, Tagalog. Right.
So as an employee, you're logging in and you're selecting your language.
There's some caveats. Once you create your profile and select your primary language, then everything displays in your language. Right. So its default is English. And then you got to go in and create your profile and select your languages. But once you select your languages.
Pretty slick.
Yeah, I think so, man. So here, let me push play.
You figure the government would probably jump all over that, no?
Listen, surprisingly, I've had meetings with the government. I've had meetings with associations and showed them what we're doing and how they're helping. And all of them have said, yeah, we'll call you. Don't call us.
And you never get a call?
No.
Atta boys.
You know, yeah,
and girls.
And listen, to each his own, right? If you can't sit at the table, just make your own table. That's how I look at it. So away we go.
We're in construction. We can build tables. Yeah. Okay, so what are we doing here?
All right. So this is just our training pack, and this is kind of what it looks like. You know, we go through duties and responsibility. You were talking about pictograms and stuff.
So there you go. See, that's pretty clear.
So these are a whole bunch of animations that we have from our library that we created. And, you know, it just kind of shows the how not to do it type deal, along with our Instagram page. Right. But, you know, we put a lot of these animations into it so that the workers have a better understanding.
Yep.
We cover a lot of the duties and responsibilities, different modules inside this training pack, PPE.
And then you can change the language there.
Yeah.
Oh, look at that.
You know, so some Portuguese. It sounds like I'm on the Portuguese.
But then the video is still titled English or?
No, yeah,
the video is still titled because you're pulling so much it from YouTube. I can do. Yeah, I know, I get it.
There's that only so sense. Much, but even with YouTube videos, you can create subtitles and have you subtitles and stuff like that. You can do that.
Same with LinkedIn does that nowadays too, if you share it on LinkedIn.
Right, so, you know, like we throw in the regulations, we talk about a
all
lot.
All the docs, so you're all clickable and...
Everything's clickable. And, you know, some of the training packs, the modules, workers' rights, duties and responsibilities, PPE. We go into this one with the fall protection systems, the company's specific procedures. We put these all in here, too. And, you know, you try to cut out some of the fluff and the repetitive stuff.
Can the employee sign off that they went through all this?
The system tracks that. There's no need to sign off.
So they know that that person, that employee, went through the system.
And it creates a record of training for these workers that once they complete.
That makes a lot of sense. Because now you'll get this, you'll be notified as the employer, and now it's like, okay, employee A did this in this 100%. Language or whatever.
There's an entire reporting section that tracks all of this.
Wow.
We got pretty graphs and nice charts and nice bar graphs and, you know, we got all that nice jazz too.
That's right? Pretty cool.
Yeah, listen, it's nice to be on Instagram and stuff and see everyone's project spotlights and, you know, but from a safety professional, like how do I do project spotlights, you know?
Yeah.
But we're fortunate enough to have built a system. We're fortunate enough to have some really great clients and we're fortunate enough to be tackling some of these challenges. You know, and our system, just for everybody out there, is not just for us. We built a system for other safety companies and consultants, and we have an entire LMS component, and we have other safety companies using this as an LMS. We have employers, we have constructors that have orientations built into this, and they use it to do their multilingual orientations on site, right? So it's a Swiss Army knife, is nice.
Have you, outside of construction?
No.
Hospitality?
Well, we cover construction and industrial.
Okay. All right. I'm just right wondering now if it can be implemented into a different industry.
Yeah. Well, industrial regulations cover restaurants and cover all kinds of things.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So our system, again, it can be modified. Right, but and we have a lot of flexibility with what we create and for who we create it for.
Listen, man, restaurants are kind of. I remember like being 13 years old and being a baker at Michelle's Baguette and having the big mixing bowl that was like 3 feet wide and that mixing bit in there. And then like the guy just said, "Don't put your arm in there when it's mixing."
Yeah, that's the extent of your safety training.
That was it. Don't put your arm inside there.
Don't stick your fingers where you wouldn't stick your, you know. But look, even I think the one that comes to my mind first is, Fiera Foods?
Have
you ever heard?
I've heard.
Oh, my God, man. They've had like three or four fatalities in the last 5 years or 6 years or some crazy shit like that. It's like people get their hair stuck in a machine. Yeah, no, they've had a lot of...
pretty dangerous because the machines are very similar to construction machines, right?
I don't know about similar to construction machines, but one thing's for sure.
Hazard-wise, I mean.
Oh, yeah, no. Struck by, crushed by, and pinch and pulls and...
hand stock, clothing stock.
All kinds of ways.
Yeah, okay.
Right, whenever you're working with machine or equipment. But again, just to kind of sum it all up, the safety summit was amazing. Thank you to the OGCA. And thank you to Jen, who invited me also. And it was nice meeting a whole bunch of people I haven't seen in a while. And it was great to see everybody throw in their two cents, which is exactly what the safety system in Ontario needs. More input from people that are on the front lines. You know, and some of the challenges they face. Hopefully something comes out of it. And, you know, we got a lot of work to do when it comes to stats. stats aren't really changing, right? So that kind of sucks, especially, you know, a lot of great initiatives and millions of dollars and I don't know.
So I guess nobody really does a extra amount of work unless the stats dramatically increase.
I don't know.
If they stay kind of averaging.
Listen, you know what? WSAB has a term. It's called acceptable loss.
Why do they even have that categorized?
Because they're an insurance company.
Acceptable loss. And that's how you get a Luigi.
I don't know about that, but it is an insurance term. And these things are all calculated and we're all numbers and stats and data.
Oh, I know that. Automakers are like that.
The reality is in certain sectors, this is an acceptable loss. I guess. Right? Just like the military. Well,
wouldn't
and
the objective be look like at zero? That. Wouldn't it be nice to see 1 year we had zero?
For us to have zero, we'd probably have to have zero construction. You know, I think...
There'd be an increase in DIY construction debts.
Who knows, man? You know, you'd like to see these go to zero, but the reality is they'll most likely never go to zero just because construction is, what, the first or the second largest sector? Again, not speaking now, I'm just saying historically. With the most workers and
but
the
in
most
all these
hazards.
Governing bodies, I would be my objective if I was working there would try to get it to zero. Why are we getting acceptable loss? I'd be like, why don't we get to zero?
Because zero is unrealistic.
Unrealistic. Like the 4 minute mile was unrealistic. It was like everything's unrealistic until you actually achieve it. Wouldn't you want to be the country that actually we've had zero deaths in construction this year?
It would be
that'd be a huge milestone,
massive milestone. I just don't see it being realistic.
But if you're being paid so much money to govern these organizations and come up with all these acronyms, then come up with a zero.
Just keep in mind, Manny, we can't. You know, you can't police people's actions. And all yes, you can.
It's
go
ironic. You're policing the people who do the work's actions.
I know, but Manny, I'm an inspector. I go to your site. I go maybe. Once every 2 weeks. That's kind of the minimum.
Okay? So you got 10 days there that you're not there.
And that's if an inspector average. Shows up at the site. And I'm average. Not talking about the current environment now. I'm talking about 20 years ago, 15 years ago, where you would have your area, right? Let's say my area was North Brampton. I know all the big projects. I know where all the small projects are. And my job was to wake up in the morning and hit as many projects as I can. And be home by 5 o'clock, right?
And there's only so much time in the day.
There's only so much work. I'm over here, and I was on that site last week. But 2 weeks later, they have a critical.
See,
right? Sometimes
I already got the marketing campaign for zero. I already designed it.
But they've already done those.
If we achieve zero criticals, I don't need to add another zero to payouts in legal courses, lawsuits. We achieve Who's zero here. No. Remember, I always want to add a zero.
Oh, for the fatalities.
For the fatality amount
and stuff. Yeah.
Right. So if we achieve zero here, I don't need to add a zero here. That's the marketing campaign. It benefits everybody. Then you got corporations that are running big construction that don't have to worry about sitting at a table going, "What do you mean I got to pay out $200,000?" Well, no, Manny's involved in this one, so it's $2 million, right? Right. So if you would have got zero, we wouldn't have this conversation about me adding a zero.
And if you were a judge, I feel like you'd be grabbing that gavel and whipping it at people, man. Right from the top bench. Boom.
I'd be like having a little swig and I'd be like, let me make my decision after I have a few drinks.
Oh, man. But, just going back to these stats and data, one thing that was mentioned by the CPO office and, a good percentage of these, I didn't put the slide up, but I have the slide. A good percentage, and I'll say, I think it was 80 or 88% of these fatalities and criticals are happening in low rise, man.
I know. I'm not disagreeing with you. Low rise is a wild, wild west. I get it. I understand it.
But this has been on inspectors' radars for 20 years. We know that the low rise was the wild, wild west, man. Right?
Trying to figure out how do we change that.
Manny, it's caring, man. The Ministry of Labor has to care about these stats. And they can show how they care by hiring more inspectors, paying them a salary that they deserve, and letting them go out there, training them well, which is apparently a very difficult task these days for the Ministry of Labor.
To train them?
Yeah.
Why?
Because you got people that don't have the experience training people.
That's where I went.
Right? I know. I think, what is it right now? What did I hear last? That The inspectors that have been at the MOL for less than 5 years are the ones that are training the new inspectors that are coming in. And it could even be less than 5 years. It could be that they've only been there for 2 or 3 years.
Wow.
Yeah. The turnover's got to be madness, eh?
Well, listen, they didn't do themselves any favors by firing 40 inspectors, right? So, but I don't know.
There was issues going on with those 40, right?
It's, so they say.
Tissues.
I don't know. They slice things different ways, then they show things different ways, and I don't know, man. You know what I do know?
I wonder if people, sorry, go ahead.
What I do know is that enforcement is a major key to our system. We need checks and balances, and we need effective checks and balances.
But what's more important, enforcement or education and implementing that education?
I think it's a three-pronged approach with all of those, but enforcement still needs to take the lead.
Because if you have the education, you implement it, and now you actually have it on the site, when you are visited by an inspector, you're checked and you're balanced. Technically,
there's a lot of variety of factors that contribute to contraventions, right? Why did you guys forget to put the guardrail here?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Who removed the guardrail? You know, what is your process, your procedure? Who's responsible for this? And right, there's a lot of things with it, just one simple. Why is it all this garbage here? Right? And these things can add up. You know, I like to think as the MOL inspectors, as the referees. And that's how I always approach my position. You're just the referee. Right? But if the referee's not there, you know, right. You can have in many posters that says work safe. You can have posters all around your job site. But if the referee's not there, things get out of control. And that's what I find.
I would just like to see it dramatically skew down towards
zero. All would. We all of us.
We just looked at data from 10 years and it's up, down. It's staying in the medium.
It's 23 is the average.
It's staying. Yeah. Right? So there's no getting worse, getting better. There's none of that. And what makes me nervous is that's an upturn in economic. And now we're into a downturn in economic.
One thing's for sure. With the current economic situation and the reduction of production overall,
they're going to take their gold stars. That's not right.
No, what I'm saying is our Ontario health and safety system has an opportunity now. To ramp up safety, to really get into where it needs to go.
Yeah,
to go down those beaten paths or to go down those paths that haven't been walked. You know, to create specific initiatives to re-bolster the inspectorate and train them accordingly and adequately. I think adequately is the key word there, right? We have an opportunity to ramp up safety right now.
I got another one. Remember Guardians in New York City?
Those guardian angels, they used to walk around angels. The red berets stuff. Like we had them in Toronto too.
Yeah, regular citizens that were just grouping together and then keeping an eye on everything. I think we need a version of that in the Ministry of Labor.
Those are health and safety consultants, and I go on site and, hey, I'm here for my subcontractor, and I go to the constructor and I say, hey, listen, you're missing guardrails and you're missing this and, you know, this and that. Get the fuck out of my office.
But here, I'll paint this picture though. I'm going to paint it slightly different. We show up on sites. We're not issuing any orders or summons.
No.
But we're letting you know that your job site is
shit.
And then we walk away. You tell us to fuck off or we walk away. Nah. But in your mindset as a constructor on that job site, are they going to notify the Ministry of Labor now? No. And we are a target?
Keep this in mind, Manny. Anybody can file a complaint with the Ministry of Labor. There's a 1-800 number.
I get it, but you have to be on the site. But if you got guardian angels that are coming to the job sites, and listen, we see it. We're just giving you a preemptive, listen, just take care of this shit.
There's no incentive.
They won't do it?
Why? Who the fuck are you coming on the site and telling me what I should do and not do? Beat it. Get out of here.
I would do it if I was the constructor and then there was missing. I would do it.
Some random super citizen comes up to you and says, none of your guys on your site are wearing hard hats. It's like you're like a Karen, man.
I think it would work.
Super Karen.
Maybe I should apply for the job.
For Ministry of Labor?
Yeah.
Manny.
And revamp this whole thing.
Do you like lots of paperwork?
Fuck no.
Do you like being micromanaged where every 15 minutes?
I would hire somebody to take care of the paperwork and I'd be like, in my contract, you can't micromanage
me. Do you enjoy getting GPS tracked everywhere you go?
No.
Do you enjoy having managers that know less than you?
No.
Do you enjoy having to call other people that used to be inspectors and get advice from them because you can't call internally on your own team to ask them questions?
I would do that though. Yes, I would do that. Yeah.
Some of them do.
I wouldn't have a problem with doing that. I'd be contacting people going, hey, here's my situation. If this was going on, how would you handle that?
Right now, being an inspector is a very difficult position, man. And I feel for a lot of these inspectors. But again,
we need data on that when they're all turning around and who's training them. And I bet you it's scary numbers compared to what it was.
It is. And the amount of inspectors that quit.
Yeah.
Is I've never seen this before in my life. I'm not even talking about the fired ones. I'm talking about I think last year it was at least two criticals I had, where the inspector shows up. It was a critical and one part one ticket to one of my client's subs. The inspector shows up, and then 3 days later, okay, where's this inspector? Oh, Philip, he quit. Or this inspector issued a ticket.
You brought this up before. And why hasn't that folder been handed off to somebody else? Because there is no somebody else to do it.
Manny.
So he gets lost?
Pull out your calculator. You want to do some quick math here?
Sure. Go ahead.
One inspector is required to do 240 inspections per year.
One inspector?
Yep.
240.
Yeah. 240. Okay. If you fire 40 inspectors, okay, do 240 times 40.
9,600.
That's how many inspections did not get done. Now, out of that number, what was it, 9,600?
Yeah.
Divide that by, let's say half, just for fun.
So 120? Or just divide by half?
9,000, yeah.
So 4,800.
Those probably how many criticals or investigations that they were on. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's. Did not get investigated or got charges
that's
dropped.
1 year.
Or in 1 year.
That's just Ontario.
So it could have been that. What was that number? Half?
4,800.
So I'm an inspector. Okay. I'm supposed to do 240 inspections. Okay. That's my quota, I guess. Half of my, and in, depending on which office you're in, if you're in the Toronto office, you're doing like 80% reactive work.
Fuck.
Right? So reactive is all investigations. There you go. That's a lot of investigations where.
So what's the management doing?
They're having a meeting about it.
No, I know what they're doing. They're adding zeros. All right. Another good show, Phil. Thanks very much, man.
Manny, thank you very much. Thank you, everybody. And thanks for watching.
We're out of here.
You're listening to Safety Corner, powered by TCL and S1. For workers, by workers. Online and in-person health and safety programs and training available in 10-plus languages. Reach out to them at www.mys1.ca and DM them at my_S1 for more information.